Hello and welcome to The Mic Is Yours, a monthly podcast bringing you episodes of entertaining, informative, and honest discussion with leaders, experts, and public figures from all over the world. I am your host, Adele Prévost. Let's get started. Today, I'm very pleased to welcome Rahel Gedetu to talk about the African diaspora in America. Welcome, Rahel.
Well, thank you, Adil, for having me today. I look forward to talking to you.
So Rahel is an entrepreneur born in Ethiopia and has lived in different countries between Ethiopia, Canada, Ghana, and the Chad. But she decided in early 2000 to settle down in Washington, D.C. and became a business owner. Rahel has founded few companies like Afrolehar LLC or KnockKnockAfrica.com, which is a cross-cultural branding company aiming to offer marketing services and communication strategy to enter and retain the African market. During the last 40 years, the foreign-born population from Africa has grown rapidly in the U.S. The population has roughly doubled each decade since 1970, with the largest increase happening from 2000 to 2012. So you roughly happened to move to the US when this big population from Africa was coming to the US. Well, today, according to the African Union permanent representative in the US, there are about 50 million African diaspora in North America, 100 million in the Caribbean, and an estimated additional 200 million in Central and South America, totaling roughly 350 million children. Well, just think about all these numbers. But more than that, the African diaspora, formally and informally, contribute over 100 billion to the continent annually. Well, so if you think about it, Rahel, you have been an expert in marketing across Africa, and you are extremely active in the African diaspora here in Washington, D.C. I have a few questions for you. What is the perception of Africa from a diaspora perspective? How does the diaspora impact policy towards Africa? What is the role of the African diaspora in shaping U.S. policies towards Africa?
Well, now the mic is mine. Well, thank you so much, Adil. It's a loaded question. What is the perception of Africa from a diaspora perspective? So the perception of Africa as a diaspora member, we know the continent, we know our respective countries, we know also if we've traveled around African countries, we also know the various regions. From a diaspora perspective, you know, the African Union in early 2000 has mentioned that the African diaspora is the sixth region. And so we recognize as a body of the African continent and the African Union vision of ensuring that there's a connection between the African diaspora and the African continent and the African continent's development. And so living here, you know, I, of course, I've been in the U.S. since the early 2000s. I've been coming back and forth since the early 90s and have left Ethiopia, my birth country, since the early 80s. But I have always been back to the continent, especially after I graduated from university. I was able to go back. I went to work. I worked for different agencies and organizations. And so it allowed me to really understand what the African countries are facing from a development perspective and how nations building or lacking of nation building is happening on the continent. So, and when we talk about diaspora, there's also the African American community. And so what is back in the 1960s, so I won't go back into a lot of the history, but in the 1960s, the African American community was seen as part and parcel of the African diaspora. So they were, even in terms of policy, the US policy, it integrated the African American communities as a diaspora member of Africa. So therefore, everything that was to do with connecting with Africa from a U.S. foreign policy perspective was done through the channels of African Americans from an engagement perspective. Of course, there's at the country level, president or prime ministers or kings that were connecting with the American presidents, but from an African diaspora perspective, the African American community was also involved. So there are different ways of seeing what an African diaspora is and what how African diaspora sees itself and sees Africa. So I'll talk from, because I've worked with the African American community, so I understand their view of Africa and their connection or lack of, because there's a certain generation that are a little bit older than 70s that still are aligned with Africa and still preach about Africa. But then you have a whole generation that is completely disconnected. Now, Ghana, for the 2019, for the 400-year anniversary, they did a big campaign, a whole year campaign, to engage African Americans and Afro-Caribbeans to really engage in Africa's development, specifically through the gateway of Ghana. So that was a great initiative. From an African, entre guillemets, as they say, African immigrant perspective, because I am a diaspora, but I was born in Ethiopia, and most likely if I have children, my children will be born here. So they will be really the first generation, because I consider myself first generation because I came here as a kid. So most of my life I've lived it in America and Canada. And so, but I also worked in Africa. I still work on the African issues, and I've studied globalization and how it affects Africa as well. So the perspective differs from one to the other. So I'll go to the second question and really wrap it up and as both. How does the diaspora impact policy towards Africa? Now, from a policy perspective, there is a lot of engagement. Of course, if we want to be realistic, and we really have to be when we address this, there is we're not mobilized as the African diaspora. We're not organized. I think the African diaspora, because there is segments between African Americans who consider themselves diaspora, then you have African immigrants who came in the 1980s like us, like me and my family, and then you have those that came in late 90s, so that between early 80s and late 90s, there's a whole of almost 20 years that passed that America, even the Population Institute has actually done a study about this in terms of the migration that happened really about from African countries happened after late 90s. So it's different mentalities, different perspectives. But then you have now early 2000 and 2000, late 2000, 2020s and 21st century type of migration. So we're all here, but unable to mobilize ourselves, because we all don't come from the same space, and then you have the disconnection between education, and then you have ethnic group and so on and so forth. So from a policy perspective, we haven't been that efficient. Now, from a US perspective, early 2000, there's this thing called the African Growth Opportunity Act, which I have been very active for many years with the African Growth Opportunity Act, which is a legislation to incentivize trade between US and Africa, but to benefit African countries so they can develop their economies and they can develop their manufacturing and really create a lot of jobs on the African continent. So that legislation allowed tariff-free, about 6,000 products can come into the US without no quota and no tariffs. Now, the African countries, unfortunately, have not really injected enough funds to develop the manufacturer end in order to really increase the trade between US and Africa by bringing made in African products into the US market. Because of course, and this is where we come in, right? And even Knock Knock Africa was created for that, because you need to have market analysis and market understanding. You need to have connections with the buyers. You need to know where the stores, you're not gonna sell a specific spice in a market where nobody buys spice. So you have to know where to sell your products. Talking about packaging and branding and marketing and promotion, and really ensuring that your market access is we hold your hand throughout the entire process to make sure that you have sales and you're able to grow sales. That's where Knock Knock Africa and Afro Lahar really comes in and really takes the African producer. And we really are not looking for commodity producers, more we're looking at value-added manufacturers, because we want to make sure that you add value to the African products, and then we are able to penetrate the US market.
Well, so Rahel, you're telling us that the African diaspora is not well organized in America. Well, what should be done?
I'm happy you asked me that question because my company was established as a diaspora company, and we have worked with various diaspora communities and leaders. And so now we have focused mainly on African diaspora entrepreneurs and business owners. So we are working to organize a chamber of African diaspora. So it might not be called a chamber, but it will definitely be an organization that is structured, and it will be for African diaspora business owners and entrepreneurs seeking to be the cultural brokers between US and Africa. When I say cultural brokers, it's business brokers, because we have a great understanding of Africa and we have a great understanding of the US and also the business mentality. Focusing less on the activism and so on and so forth, and focusing more on the business transaction. So that's how we believe we will do that. And just as a side note, I'm a member of, I'm actually part of the board members of diaspora organizations, existing diaspora organization from Uganda to Nigeria, so different organization. I'm one of the few Ethiopian borns that does that.
Well, so Rahel, you have been working between the US and the continent of Africa for many years. Well, can you please tell us what are the challenges you have been facing as an entrepreneur? Well, let's go a little bit further. Any challenges as a woman entrepreneur?
So I'm a North American African, born in Ethiopia. That's what I've always called myself that since I was a kid. So that's what I am. I have a great understanding of both worlds because I live both worlds. I'm educated even when I was in Ethiopia or any other African countries I've lived in. We were always educated in a French school, and then I went to a British school, and then finished in a English university. I got my degree from a Canadian university. So I'm really a global citizen as well, because I've traveled the Middle East, I've traveled Europe, I understand different languages. I speak about 4 or 5 languages. So I have a great understanding of cultures and how nuances, there's certain things that you can and cannot say. So from a challenges perspective, I think you mentioned it as being a woman and being an entrepreneur. I think that has been one of, I would say, my greatest challenge, especially at the beginning. Even as a professional, because I think our generation, we didn't have lots of women at the higher level. And so even starting up, even when I started working, I was about 15 or 16, there were no women bosses I had. I think it was only in late 2000s that I had a female boss. And so so that would be, I'd say, as a great challenge. Having worked with women organizations as well, women entrepreneurs, and there was this thing called African Women Entrepreneurship Program run by the state. So I was involved a lot with that as well, and understanding the challenges of African women. And having worked for other organization agencies in the past as a professional, I already knew the challenges of African women on the ground as well. So that's one thing I would say. So my company really is... So we focus on branding. So that's our core. That's our heart and soul in terms of, and when I say branding, it's not the wonderful logo and colors. That's not what branding is. Branding is really about changing the mindset of an experience of your consumer and other stakeholders. And so that's what we focus on. So our clients are mainly, our targeted primary clients are, African ambassadors, embassies, government. And then we have African businesses and US businesses as well. U.S. businesses from a perspective of corporate social responsibility and how they have to change it from just, I'm putting X amount of dollars and I just have my logo, but not really looking for that impact from that measurement. So really thinking through with companies to say, well, you shouldn't just put your logo for an event and put $10,000 and that's what your CSR is. No, think about measurable impact, sustainability. Think about how your country, how your company can actually have a better relationship with your future consumers. Similarly, for African governments, we've worked with various governments, and unfortunately, since we signed an NDA, we have worked with from East to West and even Southern African countries. We don't necessarily have, we haven't worked with North Africa because they have not been our target market. We focus on Sub-Saharan Africa. These are the African Growth Opportunity Act country members, which are the 40, 39, depending on sanctions and so on. So we work in country branding. We create a country branding strategy. So we work with Minister of Foreign Affairs on that. We've worked with ambassadors here in Washington, D.C. about how to promote their countries, not necessarily through lobbying or anything, because we're not lobbyists. We focus mainly on the public relation and the communication side, specifically on how to message when they send out communication, what kind of content they should be publishing, and so on and so forth. It's really about changing the mindset, also their digital footprint, which is their online presence, really polishing it up and ensuring that they're able to constantly and continuously feed their content, so they're actually telling a better story about their countries. And then focusing on AGOA, we have created this platform called Knock Knock Africa. And that is to really promote the made in, as I mentioned earlier, made in African country products, country X product in Africa. And so it's hand-holding from the branding, packaging, to market access, making sure that, and there are lots of challenges because we invested a lot of money, especially for the e-commerce platform. We tested it numerous times. Of course, you know, I won't divulge some of the because many folks have tried to do this and it's not easy. It cost us an arm and a leg. We got investors. And it's one of the most, actually from all the business I've done so far, now because we have 6,000 vendors on our platform, and one of the greatest challenges we had was for African entrepreneurs themselves, the producers, to be able to ship out. So if anything, and so we're solving that problem. It took us years to actually figure out, not necessarily just figure out, but really addressing the issue at the micro level. Right, at the macro level it's easy, but at the micro level it's a little bit more difficult, and also getting it to the consumer end. AgriFrica is a platform we created focusing on energy, agriculture, and environment, because it consists about the future of Earth. 60% of the world arable land is on the African continent, and so even with the Malabo Agreement, it's about food security. You know, even the SDG goals is about food security, water, environment, the co-op as well. So all of it that has to do with the future of Earth, we focus on that. But what we have done is we've created an e-commerce platform, again, a subscription publishing platform, not an e-commerce platform, but a subscription publishing platform. And also in complementary to that, we publish a quarterly magazine focusing on a specific theme. So we've covered coffee, which is one of the largest commodities. We've covered water, the importance of water, because the world is running out of, you know, potable water. So we even had a water expert from Israel to cover, write us a wonderful, the importance for African countries on how they can learn from Israel, because Israel is actually a water diplomacy leader, and how they have different technologies and how African countries can do that. We had the climate bond right for us, which is focusing because we had a publication about environment. So we really are pushing beyond what the rest of the world have dealt with Africa. We're really saying, no, we need to up our game, as they say in America, and ensure that the content is polished, our presentation is polished, we have substance, and Africans can read our magazines and learn on what they can do and who is there that they can tap into that are really subject matter experts.
Well, so Rahel, if I want to summarize what you just told us, the African diaspora in America is not well organized and is not mobilized, which has definitely some consequences on the trade. The reason for not being organized properly, according to you, is because the immigrants coming from Africa came at different time, and they came with different background, different mentality. And so it is pretty difficult to get all these people organized today. But so this concept and definitely explanation has some consequences on the trade and trade between the continent of Africa and the US. As you said, Africa needs to position herself as a strong global player. And from what I understand, you would like a greater intra-African trade. Well, let's hope the CFTA, you know, the Continental Free Trade Area, will play its role positioning Africa as a single continental market. Well, let's hope that's going to happen anytime soon. But then let's talk about the next question. What is the role of the diaspora in shaping US policy towards Africa?
So the question of what is the role of the diaspora in shaping US policies towards Africa? We're seeing election after election a little bit more of the African diaspora presence, being a little bit more active from an electoral perspective, from a civic participation perspective. There is also a greater interest of US policymakers to hear African diaspora members, because you have now a generation of Africans who are born here, African professionals like myself who have businesses here, who are very active and are involved, and understand both sides of the Atlantic. We understand very well African countries. We also understand the US market and US policy. And so it's much easier for us to influence policy because, again, it gives us an opportunity to say, this is how the US should position itself in Africa.
Well, so if I understand properly, the African diaspora is more active when we talk about politics than trade. Okay, fair enough. Well, I have another question for you. Africa is a vital region with some of the fastest growing economy in the world. Africa is a continent of thousands of languages and cultures, unparalleled eco-diversity, and over a billion vibrant and innovative people. Well, how does the world see Africa today? And is Africa important to the US?
Absolutely.
Good to hear that.
You know, indeed, you know, one of the reasons why I left my so-called jobs or work and started my business is exactly because it's important how Africa one sees itself and how Africa is seen by the world. And that's where branding comes in, because African countries, I had a presentation this morning as well, which is Africa needs to brand itself, and then it needs to brand from a country level, from a country branding perspective, and then it needs to do a nation building and nation branding perspective. So that's two ways of branding that they need to engage in. And then you have regional economic communities. So through these RECs, they need to be able to brand from a regional perspective. Then there's the continental perspective, which is the Africa, Africa Continental Free Trade Area is an actual opportune time for Africa to brand itself, because now you have a whole continent coming together saying, we're going to trade. We're going to trade amongst us. There's going to be a movement of people without no visa. And as a continent, it has an opportunity to brand itself. So how does the world see Africa? Unfortunately, for the last, I would say, has it ever been a time where Africa hasn't been seen badly, right? I think I would have to probably go back 1,000 years when Musa was actually doing his wonderful navigation with a bunch of gold. But, you know, let's talk about 21st century. I think the world always sees Africa as poor, as chaotic and in conflict. And African countries haven't done a good service to themselves because they don't promote. I have nothing against lobbyists, because I have lots of lobbyist friends, but I think the problem with African countries and African leadership, because it comes from governments. Governments have a responsibility to change the perception of Africa, working with the private sector, and the private sector also needs to, through its corporate social responsibility, need to incentivize a little bit more and build the capacity of civil society organizations to empower those the least fortunate within their community. So there's really a symbiotic, harmonious way of branding Africa, so the world sees it differently than what it has seen it in the past. Is Africa important to the US? Absolutely. And as I was saying earlier, because one of the main reasons why I started my business is exactly that. If the US does not change its engagement with Africa, the international order and security of the US will be impacted. And given the fact that the US is the leader of the Western world. If it loses its positioning, all the rest of the Western countries will also lose their positioning. And we obviously know who is the elephant or what is the elephant in the room, which we won't mention. But we know how their strategy has been on the African continent. If we understand the importance of resources, mineral resources, from cobalt, uranium, titanium, when we talk about robotics, when we talk about automation, when we talk about all of these things, there is a specific mineral that is needed, and most of it is found on the African continent, with about 5% in Asia, but mainly it's on the African continent. From a military perspective, from a security perspective, Africa is extremely important. In terms of what happened in Djibouti, in terms of the Navy. So when it comes to grad and even the supply chain, right now what is happening with the supply chain is impacting the US. So all of these elements that makes America great, believe it or not, what makes America a land of opportunity, what makes everyone want to leave through oceans and through containers and come into the land of what's called America, is because America is a place where one can come from nowhere and be someone. As someone that can start their business and excel. And if they with self-determination and really real focus and so on, you have an opportunity to grow. If the US loses Africa, and I really mean loses Africa, because when African countries start saying, America does not want us, so we're going to look on the other side, the other side will have greater influence, not just political, economical, military, intelligence. We're talking every aspect of what the future of Earth would mean. And so with, as you mentioned, 1.2 billion people on the African continent, within the next 20 years, there will be 2.something billion people, a youthful population, 6,000 languages, over 3,000 cultures. So we're talking about diversity that needs to be managed and empowered in order. So if you have the antithesis of US, of the Western world, you can only imagine what could happen for the international order and security.
Well, so as you said, Africa is seen as a poor and chaotic continent because Africans do not promote themselves. Well, the narrative that Africa is a burden has been a way of thinking for years. We all know that fixing it won't take a year, but let's hope it need not take more decades either. Okay, so yes, Africa is important to the US, as you said, and you took the example of America needs the African support to meet national security goals that it cannot accomplish alone. And we all know that ignoring Africa opens the door for other willing partners whose agendas may run counter to American interest. Well, that is our conclusion. Thank you, Rahel, for coming to the podcast, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, you can stream and download all episodes of the podcast on the mikeisyours.co.uk, and be sure to follow the podcast as well on Twitter at Odile Prévost USA. Well, thanks for listening and hope to see you next month. Goodbye. It's a shame the pain just can't fade away after the story ends. I gave you so much. Thought that it was real. Now it seems yeah. So hard. Completely disappear. Real to disappear.